Today, President Trump orders the closure of the Chinese consulate in Houston. The head of the Denver Police Union reveals there was a stand-down order to protect peaceful pro-police protesters. Trump's approval rating is strong, even amongst those who don't traditionally vote Republican. And we kick off the show with an interview with CGM host Bob Siegel, asking the question, should Christians be involved in government and politics? All of this and more on today's edition of World News Brief by CGM Radio. And welcome to this Friday, July 24th, 2020, World News Brief, where we bring you, our amazing listeners, a wrap-up of the most impactful and relevant news from around the world from the past week. I'm your host, Winston R. Holland. We have a lot to get to this week, including the closing of the Chinese consulate in my backyard of Houston, the latest in the escalation of the Cold War between the U.S. and China, the unbelievably disgraceful actions of the Denver police commissioner ordering a stand down of protecting a peaceful pro-police protest, Hannity's interview with President Trump from last night. But first, I am absolutely thrilled to welcome back via Zoom to the show a man you have become very familiar with. If you've listened to this show for any length of time, he is an author, pastor, Christian apologist, speaker, playwright, political and social commentator, and if that's not enough, and probably some other things I left off, but the very best of all, of course, the very best of all, in my personal humble opinion, he is a fellow host right here on the CGM Radio Network, hosting his daily, yes, daily now, Monday through Friday show, the Bob Siegel Show podcast. Bob, with that thoroughly unnecessary and ostentatious introduction, welcome back to World News Brief.
Ryan, you forgot to mention that I was once ambassador to France.
No! You are kidding me.
Thank you for that. I'm humbled by your introduction. Thank you very much.
Wow.
You're quite impressive with all the things you do yourself.
Well, hey, absolutely. It's good to know someone who's basically a diplomatic descendant of, I believe, Thomas Jefferson. Was ambassador to France. So, wow, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't think I better claim Jefferson on my pedigree these days. Maybe a few months ago, but
I'll get
canceled right along with him, with the cancel culture.
No. I know. I never utter the name of Thomas Jefferson, but we're that's not the subject of, well, I guess we could get into it in today's interview, but I wanted to have you back on for a couple of reasons. First, As I just mentioned previously, you are doing a show daily here on the CGM Radio Network, and you can subscribe to Bob's show by going to cgmradio.com/Bob, or just search The Bob Siegel Show, S-I-E-G-E-L, The Bob Siegel Show, in your podcasting app. Your show, I believe, is an extremely important voice for the church and really the nation as a whole to hear in these unstable and really kind of, I would say, downright deranged times. But you did a show earlier this week, Should Christians Be Involved in Politics, where you lay out the case that they should be. And I'd like to delve into that in just a second. But first, if you would tell us what led you to jump in and do a daily podcast such as what you're doing now.
Well, I've had a weekly broadcast show here in San Diego, part of the Salem Broadcasting Network. I've had that going on for 15 years. During the pandemic, I call it the panic-demic.
Touché.
I know there's real health concerns, but I think we destroyed the country. And as Trump says, the cure was worse than the problem. But anyway, when we were all on lockdown, couldn't go anywhere. We weren't even allowed to go to a beach in California. I spent a lot more time on Facebook. I've been on Facebook for years, but I was practically living there. And I got reacquainted with a mutual friend of ours, Justin Parks. I had worked with him in a drama a number of years ago that I wrote and directed, and he starred in. I cast him in the lead. And I found that politically, we were very compatible. And he was looking at some of my Facebook posts, asked me if I would be interested in doing a daily podcast. I told him I already did a weekly broadcast. He listened to that, and I guess apparently the rest, you know the story. He brought it to your attention.
And well, then, it's amazing that yours and Justin's relationship 20 years ago, you as a playwright and a director and him as starring in it, kind of produced what we have now with the Bob Siegel Show, Daily Show. So shout out to Justin Parks, who's co-host with me and my wife, Rachel, on the Big Tech Small Biz podcast, also here on the CGM Radio Network. But yeah, it's amazing your relationship back then. And then y'all reconnect on Facebook. Y'all are both pretty vocal on your personal Facebook pages, sharing kind of what you think about what's going on with the pandemic and that kind of stuff, and led to what we have now. So that's really, really awesome. So what I want to do is kind of give people a little taste of what they can expect on the Bob Siegel Show. If you don't mind, Bob, let's jump into the question quickly, and then they can go listen to the full show, episode 17 of the Bob Siegel Show podcast, where you go pretty thoroughly into the question of Christians and be involved in politics. But there are many that say, look, Christians should stay out of it, just pray, trust God, God's in control of appointing and removing kings, like it says in Daniel 2. We should just submit to governing authorities, like it says in Romans 13 and 1 Peter 2. So how do you respond when someone says Christians should just stay out of the political realm?
Well, that always sounds so spiritual, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Let's pray, let's trust God. Well, I do pray. I do trust God, and I also read what the Bible says. God is ultimately in sovereign control, in the sense that based on certain decisions of certain nations, he will allow us to remain free or end up living under some kind of dictatorship and, in a sense, incurring judgment. When people say that in the New Testament days, they say, well, Jesus and the apostles weren't involved politically, well, they were living under a whole different paradigm. The Jews in those days had been conquered by the Roman Empire. The Romans did set up a puppet court run by the Jewish priests and rabbis called the Sanhedrin. This was the very court that executed Jesus. But Jesus spoke out against this political structure and the corruption of it often. That's what led to his crucifixion. The Apostle Paul was a Roman citizen. When he was getting arrested for sharing the gospel, and he had been a Roman citizen before he converted, when he was arrested later on after converting to Christianity for preaching the gospel, he tells the jailer, hey, you just jailed a Roman citizen. Toward the end of the book of Acts, when people in the Sanhedrin were going to try to have him assassinated, and he heard that if he got transferred, the Romans were going to transfer him. He got wind of the fact that they were planning on killing him. He asserted his citizenship again, and hundreds of Roman soldiers escorted him. He finally gave an appeal to Caesar, which meant that he got to go and have an audience before the Roman emperor. That Roman emperor at the time was Nero, but it was earlier in Nero's time. It was a benevolent Nero. Nero did let Paul go. Many years later, he found himself in front of Nero again, and that time he got executed. But my point is, Paul knew how to work the system.
That he did. And I think that's pretty amazing, because one thing I've heard is that this idea of a dual citizenship, we're American citizens and citizens of heaven, that we should just throw that out. We're citizens of heaven only, and we should pretty much just ignore or not take into account that we are American citizens. But Paul certainly didn't seem to think that when it came to his Roman citizenship. Boy, I mean, he milked it for all it's worth.
He certainly did. And yet this leads to another good point, Ryan. Paul was very aware that most of the people, probably 99.9% of them, if not all of them, that he wrote to in the church, converted Jews, converted Greeks, some people that were slaves, the slaves and the masters were going to church together. Paul eventually spoke against slavery. That was quite a political statement, or an ethical statement, as we would call it. But he was aware that they didn't really have any rights under the Romans, so he called them to the only thing they could possibly do. He said in 1 Timothy, I urge that prayers be made for kings in high places. And then he gave two reasons. One, that we may live a peaceful life. Isn't that interesting? In those days, they couldn't go to the polls and vote. The only way they could influence the king was to pray for God to soften the king's heart, much as he softened Moses' heart years ago in the Old Testament days. And what was Paul's reason? That we may live a peaceful life. Well, that's interesting. Nothing wrong with wanting a peaceful life. I've been hearing ever since I became a Christian in the 1970s, oh, persecution is good for the church. Persecution is good for the church. That is such poppycock. Now, look, oftentimes the church has gone through persecution. And during those times, yes, we trust in God. And Christians have done some courageous things during the persecutions. But they've done some cowardly things, too. It all gets cleaned up when we watch it in the movies. Whenever you watch a movie about ancient Rome, the Christians are all brave. You look at some of those early persecutions by the Romans, it didn't always come down like that.
Right. Right.
One of the problems was that the emperor would alternate. One would be benign toward Christianity. The next one would hate Christians and relax laws. But what would happen is they would insist, in those days, they were insisting that the Roman emperors be worshipped as gods. And at other times, Christians were being accused of being traitors. And there were police that would literally go to your door to see if you had a certificate verifying that you had lit incense to the emperor, calling him God. Well, no Christian can call the emperor God. To a Christian, nobody's God but Jesus. And so what did Christians do? Well, some of them were brave and they got killed off. Others, they went ahead and they compromised. They would actually purchase or forge a certificate and say, oh, well, we fooled them, God. I told them I worshiped the emperor, but between you and me, God, you know that I didn't really do it. Other times, under the threat of torture or death, Christians would recant. Then, Ryan, what happens is the next emperor comes along and he allows Christianity. And so all those cowards who had fled came back. What persecution did through the early church is the brave ones got killed off. It left the cowards to run the churches. Or can you imagine somebody running off and then they want to come back and the elders are going, well, boy, were they really born again? Well, how could they have done that? Should we let them back in?
That's what I've read about is a big problem in the early church was the question of what do we do with the Christians that recanted during the times of an emperor that persecutes the church? What do we do once an emperor rises up that doesn't? They want to be let back into the fold. What do we do with these people? You know, and so I think you're right. It's very interesting to see how the brave ones, a lot of them get killed off. And then you're kind of left with those who didn't stay faithful to run the church, which could be a big problem. I wanted to see what you thought about this idea because, you know, the whole idea of God appointing and removing kings, like it says in Daniel chapter 2. Well, the question I want to pose to those who say, to those who believe that, like I do, but who use that to say Christians shouldn't be involved in politics is, who's king of America? Like who is the king of America? Well, according to our founders, the Constitution. We're a constitutional republic, and essentially the Constitution is the king, and we're to abide by the Constitution. So, kind of by the same logic that God, essentially appointed the Constitution, which is a representative republic, which requires voting to maintain, which at least involves some activity in the political process. So I don't know, my thinking, if God appoints and removes kings, well, then God appointed the Constitution, and that Constitution requires voting. And so, you know, we do have a responsibility.
We certainly do. And just imagine if Paul was alive today, where the governors and the governed are supposed to be one and the same. We're supposed to be living under a constitutional republic, not an oligarchy, not a dictatorship. Would not the same Paul who wanted us to have a peaceful life and encouraged Christians to do everything they could back when all they could do was pray, if they could now do more, he'd still say, pray for the president, pray for the senators, pray for your freedom, but do something about it. Go to the polls and vote. But there was another interesting thing in Timothy. Living a more peaceful life was only part of his reason. He also said there, this is good and acceptable in the sight of God, our Savior, who wants all people saved and all to be brought back to repentance. Listen, and I just paraphrased that, but that's essentially what it says. He's saying that a more peaceful life is more conducive to the spreading of the gospel. Jesus also said in other places in the gospels that to whom much is given, much will be required. We've been given so much in America. God expects more from us than somebody living in a third world country where they don't have as many rights. If we take the freedoms that we had in this great experiment, as it's often called, and just flush it all away, there will be accountability for that. But it's better for the spreading. If we start living under persecution, and depending on who wins this election, that just could happen. One of the first things that's going to go, Ryan, is podcasts like the CGM Radio Network, your show, my broadcast.
I've thought about that a lot.
Books. You know, when Hitler came into power, they did book burnings. You don't have to do book burnings anymore. We know what the liberal views are of people like Amazon. Every book I've published is on Amazon. Now, fortunately, I have their copies, but I'm starting to think I should find a big safe and a hole to bury them in someday so that future generations might find them, because all you need to do now, with everything so digitized, you can have a very clean book burning, if you will, and it'll be done by the same people that are right now doing real burnings of buildings. So we're living in very precarious times. There's hope. I trust God, but God wants us to get involved.
Amen. Amen. I wanted to ask a question along this line. This wasn't answered specifically in your episode 17 of the Bob Siegel Show, but it's something I've been thinking about. So you get a little Bob Siegel exclusive here on World News Brief. So I think it's pretty easy. Like it says in Acts chapter 5, Peter and John, the apostles, standing up to the government saying, look, you can tell us to stop preaching, you know, whether it's good in your sight to disobey God and obey you, whatever. This is my Ryan translation, whatever. But look, we must obey God rather than man. And so I think when, for example, your governor, Gavin Newsom, gives an order to not go, or at times my governor as well, sadly here in Texas, but really California seems to be where it's worse right now. You know, don't sing in church, don't go to church. It's very easy to say, okay, look, we got to obey God rather than man, and the scripture's clear on that, so civil disobedience in those instances is definitely the will of God when they're telling us to clearly contradict the commands of scripture. But when it gets a little more difficult would be in the realm of, say, just like has been done here in Texas and in a lot of places, wear a mask. There's essentially a monarchical style government edict that is issued, basically law created from the mouth of the governor, who basically says, wear a mask, whether you're outside or you're inside, you know, depending on the state, what they say to do. But they command, wear a mask. And obviously, we can still follow Jesus faithfully and wear a mask. But where do you stand on civil disobedience in light of the scriptures and an order such as a mask wearing order, which is a little more nuanced than, say, like in Russia, it's illegal to preach the gospel? You know, where do you stand on that?
Well, first of all, the day after the show you're referring to, there was a much longer show about Christians and compromise, and I didn't get into the mask so much, but I did get into the fact that there are certain rights that we're told to give up between us as Christians. I won't get into the whole discussion right now, but it's a very familiar one to Christians, when there were some Christians that thought it was wrong to eat meat that was offered to idols and others didn't. And the Apostle Paul says, well, if somebody thinks it's sinful, then try not to encourage somebody to do what they think is a sin, but it's okay for you. But getting back to the mask, so there's several things. There's really a lot to unpack, and we could probably only have time to do a taste of it here. But that gets back to the fact that, okay, yes, as Christians, the primary question is this a hill to die for? Is a mask a hill to die for? Well, obviously, we're not being told right now that we can't preach the gospel. But when they're telling us we can't sing in church or go to church, there are biblical commands telling us to do that. So like you said, we have to obey. With a mask, it gets into another issue, and that gets back to the fact that, and this is the dual citizenship again, yes, we're here as Christians, and perhaps a case could be made at the moment, and I'm going to stress at the moment, that a mask is not a hill to die for. it may be in the future, that wearing a mask doesn't violate my Christian faith. But the command to wear a mask, the command to not assemble anywhere, whether it's in church or not, that does violate the American Constitution. And there are certain things I think we should just push back as American citizens, because if we don't do that, it will circle around again, Ryan, and affect our Christianity from that direction. There's a lot going on with masks. In my own case, I have not been excited about wearing them. I've worn them when I've absolutely had to. If I'm going into a bank, if I'm going into a store, they're telling us that we have to wear them. I have not been excited about churches reopening. Right now in California, we're closed again. Our church is meeting anyway, but churches are being told not to. But even when they were told to reopen, I wasn't looking forward to it because I knew it was going to be with masks and social distancing. And I wasn't really looking forward to that. And I've been part of a movement here in California that is a more political movement called Fully Reopen California Now. And we did a different kind of civil disobedience a couple of months ago where we went downtown and had a rally and we technically weren't allowed to assemble. So I wasn't thrilled, and I wasn't thrilled seeing churches going along with the social distancing. However, when the pastor of my church decided to obey Jesus rather than obey Governor Newsom, I felt it was so important that I came out and made sure that I went to church that morning. Up to now, I've been at home doing my Zoom class and watching the church online. Last week, Dana and I decided we need to go down there. We need to show solidarity with our pastor.
Amen.
And I hated putting the stupid mask on. But sure. At that time, I was saying, right now, the mask is not the hill to die for. Today, our pastor's taken a stand. Let's take it. But I do believe, Ryan, that somewhere down the road, we need to take a stand about the mask. If I'm around people that I know personally, my own mother-in-law, for example, she's a senior citizen. When she comes into our house, she asks us to put a mask on. She's worried about her health. I'm happy to do that for her. I'm happy to do that for friends as a choice. Doing it for them and doing it because the governor orders me to are two different things. I do believe there are places where masks may be necessary. The doctors are all over the map on it, but hypothetically, let's assume there are some places where it's necessary. But out on the beach, in the park, they were arresting people that were going to the park without a mask in California. They were arresting people going to the park whether they had a mask at all.
Surfing out on the water.
Yeah, there was a surfer out on the water. And, you know, that leads to the other thing. A mask can be kind of a symbol. By wearing that mask, I feel I'm making the statement that I bought into all of this hysteria. Right. And our governors and mayors, they love the masks. I was saying as far back as the beginning of March, right on my radio show, right on Facebook, I say, you watch, the term social distancing will get into our vernacular. It'll be the new Green Deal. It'll be the new Trojan horse through which Democrats try to get all kinds of legislation passed. I would not have thought back then that the mask would be a part of it. But I did predict that the 6-foot distancing that'll put restaurants and airlines out of business and only give you 25% occupancy in churches, but theaters out of business. I was sure that would happen. I'm starting to think that they're not going to get rid of the mask. Now, maybe they'll replace it with some other kind of thing, but they're going to be here a long time. The people in charge, they love those masks.
Boy,
because it's
do.
Also a sign of submission.
It is.
So it's not a one size fits all. If I'm with somebody who's really worried about their health, I'll wear the mask. But I know that most of our governors and mayors don't really believe that the masks are necessary. And the proof of that is how many people are wearing masks while they're out there burning down buildings. And even if they are wearing masks, you're not really socially distancing if you're pulling somebody out of his car and beating them to a pulp. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that probably they didn't stay 6 feet away from him while they did it. And what do our governors and mayors do? They command the people. They command the police to stand down. I will never, ever again, and I really didn't the first time, but let me just tell everyone else, you should never, ever again believe them when they say they care about your health. They are lying through their teeth.
Well, we saw
the audacity to shut down the place and then tell us they care about our health.
We saw it right here in Houston when Mayor Sylvester Turner was all for 60,000 people crammed together for the George Floyd memorial, was all for that, but then literally attempted to shut down the Texas GOP convention from meeting in the George R. Brown Convention Center. It was a total obvious, just partisan, authoritarian, dictatorial move. It was disgusting. Thankfully, a federal judge struck it down, and the Texas GOP was able to meet. But my gosh, I mean, these people are power hungry autocrats. Even a Houston mayor, and that's why I think that the American people have to understand what the left is. This is not the party of Bill Clinton. It's not the party of Jimmy Carter. It's not the party of Truman and FDR. It has changed the idea of freedom. The First Amendment, much less the Second Amendment, is on the chopping block, pun intended. Like, this is, I mean, this is, Bob, we're seeing real deal tyranny coming from these governors, coming from these mayors, and it's really disturbing. But I do think we're going to see a big win in November. That's my hope and prayer, at least. But Bob, well, we're kind of out of time here, unfortunately. But again, Bob covers all kinds of subjects on his show. It's really an eclectic show. He has a show this past week on Hollywood movies, a show on New California, the hopeful 51st state. And again, if you want to listen to Bob's full answer on the topic of should Christians be involved in politics, go to cgmradio.com/Bob. Also, again, you can search The Bob Siegel Show in your favorite podcasting app. And he's got a new show today, which I haven't been able to listen to because I've been working on my own show. But he has a new show out today, PC Manifesto. Bob, would you mind just giving us a few sentence summary of what you're talking about today?
A number of years ago, for my column that I do with Communities Digital News, that was once part of Washington Times, I wrote a thing called the Liberal Manifesto. I renamed it for my show as the PC Manifesto. And it was like a satire of the Communist Manifesto, the Socialist Manifesto, in a somewhat satirical way, but it's still very serious. I read, as if in the first person, all these politically correct viewpoints. And the thing is, Ryan, if you go down the list of the new litmus tests, and it changes over the years, which is why I updated it.
Boy, does it.
You're going to hear some stuff on there that's very recent, including things from years ago. Almost every list on the politically correct litmus test of what we're supposed to accept and believe completely contradicts another point of political correctness. So it's somewhat in a tongue-in-cheek fashion, a lot of satire. However, it's very devastatingly true. It's just a shorter 20-minute show, but I think your audience will find it very, very interesting.
No, and I think that's a perfect way to end the week off. I love the satire where you're bringing in some humor, kind of helping to lighten things up a bit while also really being able to share some straight-up truth about the contradictions of the left. And I think a lot of leftists themselves are seeing how we're seeing New York Times editors being canceled and Hamilton trying to, I mean, you can't make this stuff up. If anybody would have said this, that this kind of stuff would be happening a year ago, no one would believe you. I mean, it's truly
amazing.
It's
going to put the Onion and the Babylon Bee out of business because they can't make up funny news stories worse than what's really happening.
Truth is stranger than satire. Well, Bob, how can people follow you online and what is your website?
My website is bobsiegel.net, bobsiegel.net. I'm also on Facebook. I'm on Twitter, although I don't go to Twitter nearly as often. But you can reach me on Facebook. You can always, if you're listening to one of my shows, and I do a lot of answering Bible questions written to me, questions that people call in with. But if you'd like to write me a question by email, you can reach me at questions@bobsiegel.net.
Excellent.
And on my website, there's links to the podcast show. There's links to the broadcast show. The shows that I'm broadcasting now, we're re-editing and also making that available with the podcast. However, now that I'm on 5 days a week, there's at least 4 brand spanking new shows that are just for the podcast.
Hey, I'm loving it, Bob. I'm loving it.
You missed the broadcast, and it's 5 brand new shows because you're hearing the broadcast one that week, too.
Sure. Well, I am absolutely thrilled. I do not live in San Diego. I guess I could always tune in on TuneIn or you know, one of the online radio ways.
But why do that when they can go to the new CGM?
Exactly,
network?
Exactly.
Listen to podcasting the way the good Lord intended it.
I'm telling you, on our time, on our commute, with very limited to no commercial interruptions. Well, Bob, like I've said before, I'm thrilled to have you on the network. I'm even more thrilled to have you on 5 days a week. So again, I encourage everybody, you can go to bobsiegel.net, you can go to cgmradio.com/Bob, or just search for the show in your podcasting app and you can subscribe. That way you will not want to miss it. Well, Bob, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for joining us for this awesome, awesome interview. It was a huge blessing.
Ryan, it's always a pleasure.
All right. Well, special thanks again to Bob Siegel for joining us on today's show. So as you have probably heard, the U.S. took some drastic action in my own backyard of Houston in the great state of Texas and has made an order to the Chinese consulate in Houston to close. This is a historic happening. The Chinese consulate in Houston is one of five Chinese consulates around the world, and it further shows the escalation of the Cold War between the U.S. and China. History is repeating itself. Trump is not Reagan, but he's like a Reagan. There's so many parallels between the two. And the more I read about Reagan, the more I'm seeing that. As I mentioned last week, I'm working my way through this 800-something page a Reagan biography, which is a page-turner. It's called Reagan the Life by H.W. Brands. Highly recommend it if reading on Reagan sounds interesting to you. But that's the past. This is now. This is now, and we're in unprecedented times in our relationship with China. Trump is fighting back in every way. He's fighting back on trade. He's even exposing the Chinese Communist Party for what it is in regards to its human rights abuses. So this really is big, big stuff. So I just wanted to touch on this story for a minute. This is from the South China Morning Post. Beijing's Houston consulate is epicenter of theft of research by Chinese military, U.S. diplomat says. China's Houston consulate is the epicenter of efforts by the Chinese military to send students to the U.S. to obtain information that could advance its warfare capabilities, a top U.S. diplomat said on Wednesday in the most detailed explanation so far for the Trump administration's abrupt decision to order the diplomatic outpost closure. And when I've looked at different stories online about this, it is truly amazing to see these commentators say, well, you know, it looks like this is just a big distraction. And we're going to see this in this way. This is just a big distraction from the coronavirus, from Trump's disastrous response to the coronavirus. I mean, you see over and over these leftist commentators that are literally siding with the worst human rights abusers in the worst human rights abuser in the world. It's true over the U.S., and there's like, well, we don't have any evidence. We don't have any evidence. Well, maybe you're not privy to that evidence. Maybe we have a State Department. Maybe we have a Justice Department. Maybe we have an FBI and CIA that does have the evidence, but we haven't shown that to you yet. Have you maybe considered that? It is amazing. This just happened, and what you're expecting to have the evidence in your hand a week ago? Give it some time. I mean, it's truly they're looking for anything and everything to destroy Trump. But there is some good news we're going to get to at the end of the broadcast. Some polling numbers you might be surprised about. So stay tuned. The U.S. government ordered China to close the consulate on Tuesday, provoking outrage from Beijing. Aw, so sorry. And prompting diplomats to begin burning documents in the building's courtyard. They don't have anything to hide, do they? There's literally video on this story, which will be linked to in the show notes of this podcast, that you can see papers, right outside them burning papers right outside the consulate. It's unbelievable. Previous statements issued by the State Department spoke only in broad terms about China's alleged violation of U.S. sovereignty and intimidation of Americans. That changed Wednesday morning when David Stilwell, top East Asia official at the State Department, singled out the consulate in Houston in a New York Times interview as having a history of engaging in subversive behavior. If you remember, a few weeks ago, I don't know, gosh, when was it? Maybe a month and a half ago or so, we were talking about the Confucius Institute. Institutes, hundreds of them, all over the U.S., even in like high schools, where they are indoctrination centers for Maoist, Chinese, communist, Leninist ideology here in America. Every single one of those needs to be shut down. They are a hostile foreign power engaging in subversive activities to undermine the U.S. and indoctrinate American students who are our future. No, adios, get out of here. Okay, I'm a little fired up today. The People's Liberation Army has been sending students both overtly and otherwise to American universities to study things to advance their own warfare advantages in the economic world and the rest, said Stilwell, adding that at the epicenter of all these activities facilitated by the People's Republic of China mission is this consulate in Houston. Oh, but we don't have, until more evidence is forthcoming, this obviously is just a distraction. Trump's trying to put forward a distraction from his awful handling of the coronavirus. Oh, by the way, do you remember in January when he shut down travel from China, you called him a racist and a xenophobe? The same reporters that are saying he did just terrible handling of coronavirus called him a racist and a xenophobe for shutting down travel from China. Which, if you love Dr. Fauci so much, remember, at least in the beginning, Dr. Fauci came out and publicly said that what Trump did was very important, was very good, was necessary, and helped save lives. It's unbelievable. Stilwell also accused China's consul general in Houston and other diplomats there of having recently engaged in questionable activity at Houston's International Airport, where they were escorting Chinese citizens onto a chartered flight to China. Air China, which has made special flights to repatriate Chinese citizens amid the coronavirus pandemic, was holding paperwork with false birth dates for the diplomats, the Times reported Stilwell as saying. The Chinese embassy in Washington and Air China did not respond to a request for comment. State Department didn't either, Though the most specific explanation for the closure to date still was suggestion that the consulate had been helping students steal from U.S. Steal from U.S. universities and was guilty of other subversive behavior was patchy. Said Jessica Chen Weiss, an expert on Chinese politics and associate professor of government at Cornell. Here's her brilliance. You ready? Y'all ready for this? Get ready. She's an expert, and she's at Cornell. So let's listen in. Ready? Quote, unless more evidence is forthcoming, the U.S. decision to close the Chinese consulate in Houston looks like a stepped-up effort to use China as the boogeyman and distract U.S. voters from the Trump administration's disastrous response to the pandemic, Weiss said. Yeah, maybe, you know what? Maybe you should wait around for some evidence. You who are an expert on Chinese politics at an American university, you're quite privileged to be that, by the way. And with that privilege comes responsibility, and your responsibility is not to make stupid, she's probably a very smart individual, but this comment truly is ludicrous and is just 100% political. No question. And then you can see video. ladies and gentlemen, do not believe your eyes, do not believe your ears. When you see, when you see the members of the Chinese consulate in an area right outside the consulate, burning papers, burning what appears to be some kind of incriminating evidence. Don't believe that. Don't believe that there could be anything nefarious going on in the Chinese consulate. Just don't believe it. That's ridiculous. There's unless more evidence is forthcoming, I mean, this obviously is just a distraction of the Trump administration. Look, we have things that we did not used to have. We have video. We have video everywhere of everything at all times. It's pretty amazing. And what we have here is that they're trying to cover something up before the feds come in and take over the building. And so that's why these leftists that are reporting on this are just absolutely crazy to jump to conclusions that this is some kind of big cover-up. It's absolutely ridiculous. But now what I want to do is let's hear from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. He was at the Richard Nixon Presidential Library yesterday, July 23rd, Thursday, speaking about communist China and the free world's future. He comments on this, and then I want to listen to a couple minutes after it because he says some really, really important stuff. Here he is, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
For fairness and reciprocity, to rewrite the imbalances that have grown over decades. Just this week, we announced the closure of the Chinese consulate in Houston because it was a hub of spying and intellectual property theft. Reversed 2 weeks ago, 8 years of cheek turning with respect to international law in the South China Sea. We've called on China to conform its nuclear capabilities to the strategic realities of our time. And the State Department at every level, all across the world, has engaged with our Chinese counterparts simply to demand fairness and reciprocity. But our approach can't just be about getting tough. That's unlikely to achieve the outcome that we desire. We must also engage and empower the Chinese people, a dynamic, freedom-loving people who are completely distinct from the Chinese Communist Party. That begins with in-person diplomacy. I've met Chinese men and women of great talent and diligence wherever I go. I've met with Uyghurs and ethnic Kazakhs who have escaped Xinjiang's concentration camps. I've talked with Hong Kong's democracy leaders, from Cardinal Zen to Jimmy Lai. 2 days ago, in London, I met with Hong Kong freedom fighter Nathan Law. And last month, in my office, I heard the stories of Tiananmen Square survivors. One of them's here today. Wang Dan was a key student who has never stopped fighting for freedom for the Chinese people. Mr. Wang, will you please stand so that we may recognize you? Also with us today is the father of the Chinese democracy movement, Wei Jinsheng. He spent decades in Chinese labor camps for his advocacy. Mr. Wei, will you please stand? You know, I grew up and served my time in the army during the Cold War. If there's one thing I learned, communists almost always lie. The biggest lie that they tell is to think that they speak for 1.4 billion people who are surveilled, oppressed, and scared to speak out. Quite the contrary, the CCP fears the Chinese people's honest opinions more than any foe. And save for losing their own grip on power, they have no reason to. Just think how much better off the world would be, not to mention the people inside of China. If we had been able to hear from the doctors in Wuhan, and they'd been allowed to raise the alarm about the outbreak of a new and novel virus.
Wow. It's one thing for me to say those types of things on this broadcast, and it's a whole different thing for the Secretary of State to be calling out China for the Uyghur Muslims, being forced into concentration camps, talking about how the biggest lie is to think that the CCP speaks for 1.4 billion people scared, oppressed, and afraid to speak out. Or talking about the father of the Chinese democracy movement who spent decades in Chinese labor camps, bringing that to our attention. So the look, there's some real leadership going on in this Cold War. I hope we see a repeat of the fall of the Communist Party in China. None of us can predict that, but what they are not doing is, I think I mentioned last week, is this idea of detente, where we just kind of live and let live. Let's containment, which was the Carter administration's response, the Ford administration and Nixon administration. The whole idea, let's just keep China at bay, keep them happy. Let's just take a very innocuous approach to the whole relationship, and everything will be fine. Reagan came in and said, no, this is not okay. And so now we have the Trump's era of a Cold War with China. Now, what was the Chinese consulate's response? This is from Politico. China refuses to commit to closing Houston consulate despite U.S. demand. The head of the Chinese consulate in Houston will not commit to closing the office, a direct threat of defiance to the State Department's demand that it be shut down by Friday. In a wide-ranging interview with Politico, Kai Wei, C-I-A-W-E-I, Kai Wei, perhaps, the Chinese consul general in Houston said China is protesting the closure order and his office will remain open until further notice. Quote, today we are still operating normally, so we will see what will happen tomorrow, he said, declining to elaborate further. I personally do not. I checked the news right before I started this broadcast. I'm recording it Friday morning, July 24th. And as of right now, when I'm recording this, I did not see any additional news on top of this. I'll definitely follow up with you guys next week, or definitely share it on my Twitter and Parler. You can get me there at World News CGM, at World News CGM, Twitter and Parler. I'm really trying to do more on Parler, but I'm more stuff's going on Twitter, but hopefully over time we can transition more and more to Parler, P-A-R-L-E-R. Highly, highly, highly recommend it. It really is the new place for social media free speech, as Twitter and Facebook just clamp down more and more and more, especially as we come near the election. So China is refusing, and as far as I know, for right now, it's still operating. So we will see what happens. I don't know if you heard of this story or not. We're kind of staying stateside again. This show, obviously the previous story had to do with China, so it is definitely an international story, but this particular story really kind of hits home with me as an American, and shows just how far some of our politicians have gone with supporting the radical leftist anti-police, anti-family, anti-freedom, anti-democratic Black Lives Matter movement and organization. Let's be clear. Black Lives Matter as an organization only cares about Black lives when they can exploit those Black lives to advance their communist, Marxist, Leninist agenda. All you got to do is go to Black Lives Matter website, look at their platform points, and you'll see they don't want you raising your own children. They want the community raising their own children. You know, before the welfare state, there 20% of families, which is still high, 20% of Black families were fatherless. After the welfare state today, 80%. One of the biggest, and look, every ethnic community has their problems, okay? But one of the problems in the Black community, and Black leaders admit this themselves, this isn't just coming from me, Black leaders admit this themselves, one of the biggest problems has been fatherlessness in the home. And what does Black Lives Matter want to do? Not just take away their fathers, but take away their mother. Like, wants the community raising them. They want to destroy and disrupt the nuclear family, not to mention promote the transgender agenda. And you're like, what are you talking about? And as we all know now, apparently their spokesman, Don Lemon, in an interview/debate with Terry Crews, who I had no idea was as awesome as he is, said, no, Black Lives Matter is just a... It's just about police brutality. If you want to do something about all black lives, you start another organization. What? I thought it was called Black Lives Matter. If you're going to have an organization called Black Lives Matter and only care about the percentage of the black population that has experienced police brutality, which is an unbelievably small percentage, you really need to rename your organization. And not, because they're not out there saying that. Only Don Lemon was there. They're saying Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. They're not out there saying blacks that are brutalized by police lives matter. That's really what they should rename themselves to. They are a front group. You've got big corporations now that are pledging billions of dollars. And we know that they're funneling money to the DNC. This is a political group. We have video evidence of one of the founders of Black Lives Matter saying that her and one of the other founders are trained Marxist. Look, it is what it is, okay? And Christians should have no part. Christians, those who love America, those who love freedom, should have no part. If you are a Marxist, if you're trained Marxist, Marxists do not believe in a representative republic, do not believe in a constitutional republic, do not believe in democracy. Marxism is tyranny. Marxism is fascism. It's the very thing that they accuse President Trump of doing. When I saw this story, it was really sad. Michelle Malkin, earlier this week, she's an incredible reporter, earlier this week held a pro-police rally outside of the, it's called the Back the Blue rally. I believe it was right outside the Denver Capitol or somewhere close to there. This past Sunday. This is from the Gateway Pundit. Journalist and conservative icon Michelle Malkin has revealed that the Denver police were under a retreat order when the Back the Blue rally she was speaking at was attacked by Antifa. Just because, as Bob Siegel has said on a previous one of his shows, just because they call themselves anti-fascist doesn't mean they're not fascist. Just because Black Lives Matter names their organization Black Lives Matter, that does not mean they actually care about black lives. It is a cultural Marxist movement designed to fundamentally transform the United States of America. Fundamentally transform the United States of America. Sound familiar? Sunday's rally was attacked by a violent leftists, leaving several people injured as police did almost nothing to prevent violence or protect the crowd. Now, why would the police do that? On Wednesday, Malkin tweeted that Nick Rogers, the head of Denver's police union, revealed that the incident commander handling the event ordered officers to retreat. The incident commander handling the event ordered officers to retreat. Rogers revealed the order during an interview with the Peter Boyle's radio show. Let's tune that up now so you can hear it for yourself. This is, again, Denver Police Union President Nick Rogers. You will not believe this.
As I've done my due diligence, I did discover a couple of things. I found out that a retreat order was given by the incident commander. And we had one lieutenant step up and said, we're not leaving.
Amen.
And this lieutenant said, these people are going to get killed if we don't stay. So he kept his group there. And that's the only reason this thing didn't even get worse, because somebody broke ranks and decided to not retreat. And they stayed so that they could provide some assistance.
The incident commander, under orders to stand down. Thankfully, there was one brave lieutenant that defied the order and attempted to maintain order. And look, and this is when I think we're all, you know, whether you are a church member, whether you're a follower of Christ, whether you're a member of the police force, we are being given unconstitutional, demonic orders from authorities. And, you know, I'm not a police officer. I was not in that situation. I sympathize greatly with the police officers in that situation. But I would hope that if I was a police officer and I was given a stand-down order, whether it's a pro-police rally or an anti-police rally. Let me say that again. Whether it's a pro-police rally or an anti-police rally, that I would reject those orders to not engage in my first duty as an officer, and that is to protect the lives of the citizens that I have jurisdiction over. That's the first duty, and thank God for this brave lieutenant that I'm sure emboldened other officers to step in and protect people. I believe even Michelle Malkin was hit by one of these Antifa thugs. I mean, it's bad. It's bad. These people are violent. This is a violent revolution. Maybe they're not using guns yet. Some are. But they're not all using guns yet. JP from JP's Political Matrix was telling me last night that Mark Levin on his radio show is going to talked about a guy that he's going to have on Sunday about really revealing some concerning information that these thugs really want to take this to the suburbs. Well, I guarantee you, around where I live, you don't want these Antifa. I mean, look, if you've seen pictures of these Antifa guys, they are twerps. They look like a bunch of kids that spend all their time behind a video game. I mean, they look like they're all like 106, you know, 6'1 and 130 pounds. They do not look threatening at all. These people are a joke on one level, but on the other hand, they are actually for violence. They're reminiscent of Hitler's brown shirts from days gone by. So they are to be taken seriously, but there's a reason why they occupied Seattle and didn't try occupying Palestine, Texas, or something like that. Right? Look, you can bring it. You can bring it to the suburbs, but you're coming to the most heavily armed suburbs in the world. So good luck with that, and we'll be ready for you. We have a Second Amendment for a reason, and we will defend our homes, we will defend our property, and I'm telling you, at least I know us here in Texas, and I know some other folks around the U.S., we don't suffer these kind of fools. We do not suffer. We do not want this battle. We will pray against this battle, but if you bring it, you will suffer the consequences. You will suffer the consequences. All right, so last night, President Trump was interviewed by Sean Hannity, and I wanted to play a few minutes from that. He addresses the violence and what's going on in the U.S. and the federal government's response and kind of what he's looking at. And the interview actually starts off, Hannity regularly, if you watch his show, we'll have Dan Bongino, who I'm a huge fan of, Geraldo Rivera, and now a guy I am now a huge fan of, civil rights attorney and lifelong Democrat, Leo Terrell. I'm not sure if you heard the news, but you're going to want to hear this. It was announced on Hannity's show. It was either earlier this week or last week, about his change in politics. And actually, Leo Terrell gets to speak to President Trump directly. So let's listen in to a few minutes of the Sean Hannity show.
The president's on the line just for kicks and giggles. I'm going to let Leo Terrell, lifelong Democrat. I want you to tell the president in 30 seconds why you're voting for him. For the first time ever, right? For Republican ever.
Yes, President Trump, I want you to listen to me. Give me a call later on. First time ever in my entire life as a Republican, I'm voting for you. Now, maintain what you're doing in these Democratic cities, and I'll go on those other networks and battle those guys for you. You're going to win in November. I guarantee it. I'm out there with you 24/7.
Very much. And you've come a long way, Leo. I have to tell you, I've been watching you, and I've always respected you, even on the other side.
I'm here now.
But that's great, right, Leo.
I'm here.
I appreciate it. I do.
Thank you.
I will do that.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leo.
So all right,
really
Leo.
Great.
Geraldo, thank you.
All
right, I think that might have been the funniest moment we've had. Mr. President, sir, thank you so much for joining us. I know it's been a busy number of days here for you. A lot of news to get to. I want to spend a lot of time on the violence, the safety, security of our cities. I want to talk about COVID a lot. Let's start with some breaking news, and that is that you, earlier today, decided to pull back on the convention in Jacksonville. You gave a reason. Can you give us the reasons again in more detail?
Well, it's really the China virus. Call it COVID, call it any one of a lot of different names. But, you know, we're setting an example. We don't want to have people so close together. We've had such enthusiasm. Everybody wanted to go there. You know, we went to North Carolina. We wanted to do it there. It was all set. And we're going to build a beautiful facility. And it got hit hard, and the governor then could have treated us better, Democrat governor. But we are actually opening up there, and then we'll make our ways. It won't be your typical convention, I can say that, but it's going to be very safe. And I thought I had an obligation not to have large numbers, massive numbers of people crowded into a room.
I've been told, Mr. President, from sources of mine, you can confirm if you like, I guess maybe I'm not surprised that you are entertaining ideas that I have heard tonight that would be pretty spectacular. Would you give us any insight into what they are?
Well, we have some ideas, but it'll have to be different than your typical convention. We have just great enthusiasm in the party. I don't think we've ever had it, even more so than 2016. And you see what's going on with the polls. I made a speech at Mount Rushmore. And since that time, it's been really something that's been, before that, really, you have all of these suppression polls, and just like 2016 when they put out these phony polls, the media. But I'll tell you what, it's that the enthusiasm this party has and that they have for their president, because we're keeping our city safe. We want to go in. We can't understand. I heard you talking with the group. That's a great group of three people. But I heard you talking about the cities and the safeties of the cities. I've offered them all, every one of them, and there's 10 of them. We're offering all of them. Let us go in. We'll clean it up. Now, in Portland, we had to do it because that's their anarchists. That's a level that people haven't seen, but they're anarchists. And they were going wild for 51 days, and we went in, and they've done a great job. They're going to rip down the courthouse, a big federal courthouse, gorgeous federal courthouse. So we went in, and we've been very, very strong. And we have this Mayor Whalen, who I think is also the police commissioner, as I understand it,
Wheeler.
In Portland.
Yeah.
Mayor Wheeler. And he made a fool out of himself. He wanted to be among the people, so he went into the crowd, and they knocked the hell out of him. That was the end of him. So it was pretty pathetic. But we want to go in and help the cities. We want to help Chicago. We want to help all of them. Detroit's having problems. They're a very good police chief in Detroit, but they have problems. We'll go into all of the cities, any of the cities. We're ready. We'll put in 50,000, 60,000 people that really know what they're doing. And they're strong, they're tough, and we could solve these problems so fast. But
so we're ready, ready to help. That was quite a story when Mayor Wheeler, who also is police commissioner in Portland, wanted to be among the people. His people. These were his people. These are my people out here marching. Y'all are my people. Y'all are my... And he got roughed up quite a bit. And apparently he blamed... And who did he blame, apparently? I believe, from what I was told, he blamed the federal government. Don't believe your eyes and ears, ladies. And don't believe the people that are actually assaulting him, who are these anarchist thugs, T-H-U-G-S. I don't care what the color of their skin is. They could be pasty white or all the way to the other end. If they are anarchists, if they are committing violence, they're thugs. Absolute thugs. Thuggishness knows no skin color. And you're not a racist if you call it what it is. Because I think there are more white people, more of these white leftists that are engaging in this stuff. From what it looks like to me. And they are thugs. Absolute thugs. That's why we need to pray for this country. Pray and do whatever God leads us to do, because this is a tragedy. But let not your heart be troubled, as Sean Hannity always says, quoting Jesus Christ, our King. God is in control, so we can trust Him, and we do not have to fear whatsoever. All right, I want to get into some very interesting polling data. What do we hear in the polls? Oh, Trump is down. He's being destroyed. He's going to lose and all of this stuff. And The Economist is coming out with stuff. And everybody's coming out with stuff that Trump's going to lose. I have a question to ask you. Does this sound familiar? Does it sound familiar? President Trump's Rasmussen approval rating stood at 49% on Thursday for the second day in a row. Them winning numbers, baby. But just wait. Just wait until I tell you the next set of numbers. How we're going to almost end the show on. This is also from the Gateway Pundit. This is despite the continued media onslaught over the coronavirus, panic porn, and the liberal media trying to blame President Trump for the Democrat-supported rioting in several American cities. It's truly amazing they want to blame Trump for that when these mayors, these governors have stood by and literally let these treasonous insurrectionists take over, colonize these same people who would love to see a Christopher Columbus statue toppled in Chicago, colonize an area of the United States. And as Rasmussen reported earlier, Obama had a 95% positive media. Trump has a 95% negative media. The people are seeing through it, and they see what it is. It is media outlets have simply become propaganda outlets for political parties. These outlets, such as the New York Times and even CNN, not too long ago, you could go and you could get straight up news. These are great news for the Trump administration and the future of this country. So I went over to Rasmussen Reports. And this is likely voters. Remember, when you're looking at a poll, make sure you're looking at likely voters, not registered voters. I mean, that really is kind of anybody. But he has a 37% strongly approve, 42% strongly disapprove, but total approve is at 49%. This is basically the same place Obama was when he won re-election back in 2012. And Rasmussen has been a very reliable, very close predictor of presidential elections. Going to the RCP, looking at the RCP average means nothing, means absolutely nothing. They got it wrong in 2016. The media is more against Trump now than it was back then. So remember that these polls are designed to suppress voters, suppress Republicans, make us not want to vote, make us look like it's just over so we don't go out and vote, don't believe it, don't believe Fox News. Even if they were to come out and say this kind of stuff, there's going to be all kinds of doom and gloom. Don't fall for it. Rasmussen has been an incredible predictor, and I even think this is probably off, especially when you look at this last story from Rasmussen. Black and minority voter approval for President Trump at record highs. This is truly incredible. Back on June 5th, they reported that black likely voter, remember you want likely, not registered, black likely voter approval of the job of Donald Trump is now over 40%. And when you look at the Rasmussen reports daily snapshot, again provided by the Gateway Pundit, we are looking at a 43% approval rating of the black vote, which is truly, truly remarkable. Look, the Republican Party has been the party of minorities since its inception in the 1850s with their first president, Abraham Lincoln, who fought the Civil War in part to free the blacks from slavery. And ever since then, it has been and has become more and more the party of equal rights. The left is just going in the opposite direction of the values that I think the black community as a whole holds dear. And if Trump wins more than 20% of the black vote, he will win the election in a landslide. This is per town hall. No, Donald Trump is not going to win anything close to a majority of the black vote in 2020, but he doesn't have to. If he just wins 20% of the black vote, he is guaranteed to win the White House. And if he wins 25% of the black vote, which is within his reach, he wins in both an electoral and popular vote landslide. In fact, a recent Rasmussen poll of likely black voters shows that support for Trump has surged to 40%. While it is unlikely Trump will win 40% of the black vote, it shows that his support from the black community continues to build even after the tragic murder of George Floyd, because I think many, many black voters... Look, Leo Terrell. If you don't know who he is, look up old videos of Leo Terrell, and you'll see who Leo Terrell is. He was no friend of Republicans. This is truly, truly incredible to see people such as him and others that are on the left, blacks on the left, whites on the left, everyone in between on the left. Hispanic support for Trump is high as well, as it should be, because the Republican Party is not a racist party. It's an equal rights party. It is a equal justice under the law party. It is not perfect. I'm not going to claim it's perfect because it ain't. There's a lot of stuff that the Republicans do sometimes that do not make me happy. But look, if you got to pick between the two, at least one wants to preserve our constitutional republic, which I would dare say is a rather important party platform. They don't want to fundamentally transform the United States of America into a Marxist dictatorship. They want to restore the United States of America to the free republic it was founded to be. All right, and that will do it for this week's edition of World News Brief by CGM Radio. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Make sure to follow me online, Twitter, Facebook, Parler at World News CGM. Email me, world@cgmradio.com. And remember, you can find links to all of the articles discussed in this show at cgmradio.com/world or in the show notes of this podcast. And may his kingdom come and his will be done on earth as it is in heaven.